We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our creator, not our government. I believe that scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, June 5th, and a lot going on in Washington, D.C. to try to hold some individuals accountable for not only weaponization of government and Joe Biden's executive order that he announced yesterday that basically legalizes illegal immigration. And he's trying, obviously, to do that ahead of November because the border remains the number one concern for most Americans and reasonable Americans who are looking at the state of our country and saying that this cannot be tolerated. And so even though Biden has, for some reason, said over the last 3 years, he can't do anything without Congress. Now, suddenly, 5 months before the election, he signs an executive order. Funny how politics happens. And then also Dr. Fauci, remember him? Yeah. He was grilled by the House Oversight Committee, and he actually conceded that COVID measures such as school businesses and school and business closures may have been too harsh. Oh, really? I mean, I remember the one-way arrows in the grocery store, and you were allowed only one little pass-by. Make sure that you have your list and you get everything, because you had to wait outside. And at that time, I was still living in D.C., so in the frigid cold, and go inside because only a certain amount of people were allowed, and then you had the one-way arrows. I mean, I'm sure that that saved a bunch of lives just because of Fauci's random evil plots. But joining me now to discuss all of this and more is Representative Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin, who is part of the Oversight Committee and the Judiciary, the House Judiciary Committee. And so, Representative Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And where do you want to start? There's a lot of stuff to discuss.
So, Jenna, really good to join you. I'm so happy you bring up Fauci, because no one should be happier than the announcement that President Biden made yesterday than Anthony Fauci, because it knocked him off from the front pages of the newspaper and off from, you know, people giving full scrutiny to what he did. Because what Anthony Fauci did was, I think it's something that is a once-in-a-generation event, which should be, the American people should be reminded of regularly. I had not attended a school board meeting for probably 20 years, Jenna, before this whole COVID thing hit, and then they put the restrictions in place. And I had to fight tooth and nail against the county health officer in northern Wisconsin in the school district where my kids went to school. I had to go and fight against her tooth and nail. And all she would say is that the federal government and Anthony Fauci are saying we have to do these things. You know, the 6 feet social distancing, the masking, and boy, we should be shutting down our schools. It is one of the most evil things that has happened ever in America. And we need to make sure the American people never forget it. And especially the young generation that went through it when they were seniors in high school, now graduating from college, and you think about all the loss of learning that happened with that generation. We have to remind them, as they become voters, what Anthony Fauci and big government did to them.
Yes, so well said. And I'm old enough to remember when Dr. Fauci said, "I am the science." And apparently he meant that literally, that he was just fabricating all of this nonsense out of thin air and passing it off as trust the science, believe in the science, and I put that in air quotes, when it was really just his own maniacal plot foisted on the country that had no grounding in legitimate, rational, actual science. And yet he just seemed so unbothered during his testimony and the portions that I got to watch, and of course the clips after. And so I think the American people do want to know, where will the accountability be for Fauci for all of these decisions that truly impacted America, and I still believe are impacting America today?
Well, it deeply concerns me that, does he have sociopathic tendencies? And I know we're not here to do a psychological analysis of Anthony Fauci, but in your description of his testimony, where he's saying things like, yeah, well, maybe that wasn't the best thing to do. Or in regards to 6 feet of social distancing, yeah, it's something I said. Now, I don't know why they picked up on that. They picked up on it because you were basically instructing people to do it, and they trusted you. They trusted you. And you told people you were the science. And so why wouldn't you not expect people to follow what you are saying? I got to tell you, it is something that we got to make sure the American people never, ever forget what he did to the American people. And he should go down in history as one of the most, what's the term that I would use, Jenna? One of the most reviled figures in the history of America for what he did.
I could not agree more. And I'm speaking with Congressman Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin this morning about Anthony Fauci testifying in front of Congress and that sort of cavalier attitude that you're saying, we're not here to do a psychoanalysis. This is only a 1 hour show. So, of course, we can't get that deep into his psychosis. I think that would take a lot longer. But this type of rhetoric where he's just, I don't know why people would have believed me. Well, because they were forcing people. I mean, I remember litigating cases on behalf of the Thomas More Society representing churches at the time who were forced to close because they couldn't sing, they couldn't hug people, they couldn't fit their entire congregations in with social distancing. I mean, this was required by these so-called health mandates that were part of the executive branch that completely, in my view, was an assumption of legislative prerogative. And so is there a plan on at least the federal level to maybe walk that back and to have some kind of legislative effort that protects Americans' freedom and liberty so that something like this can never happen again?
I have not drafted any legislation in regards to this, Jenna, but I know others have drafted legislation that would curtail these what are viewed as unlimited powers by someone like Dr. Fauci. And it's really important that we do that. But I think the thing that needs to be looked at is we got to go back to their budgets, because as you know, Jenna, it's always money talks, right? These people out here in Washington, D.C. that run the bureaucracies, as long as you don't take their money, they sit back and they look at us Congress critters and they say, yeah, they can stand up and bray all they want to. It doesn't make any difference unless you take their money. We need to make them accountable, and you used that term earlier. We have to make sure that they're accountable for their budgets and the money that they're getting. And that's where we need to use the power of the purse to make sure that these agencies, like Dr. Fauci's NIAID, we need to make sure that they're accountable for how they're spending the money of the American people. That's the only way that we're going to be able to get results.
Yeah, so well said, and I couldn't agree more, because if people actually look through the pages and pages and pages of all of these budgets that Congress approves, there are so many appropriations to all kinds of various things that we shouldn't be funding. And one of the things that Donald Trump did very well in his first administration was highlighting a lot of that. Like, why are we funding the World Health Organization, by the way? Why are we giving so much money to the United Nations? Why are we giving so much money to the NIH? All of these things. And is there political will in Congress right now with a very slim Republican majority, and hopefully the conservative majority will expand past November to actually defund some of these things. I know that your colleague, Congressman Jim Jordan, who's a frequent guest on the program, put forward some of these riders to an appropriations to defund some of the weaponization of government issues. And all of those things are really good in theory, but will we see that actually in practice?
Yeah, so it'll be very difficult in this session of Congress. The Democrats control the Senate. We have such a narrow majority in the House, and people have seen that we've not been able to do some of the defunding things. But I do believe that if we can gain the trifecta in November, and this is why it's so important for people to vote, is to, if we can get the trifecta, I think that you will see much greater accountability. Now, your astute listeners are going to say, yeah, okay, Congressman Tiffany, we gave that to you in 2016, and it did not happen. Why should we have confidence in November 2024 that if we give you the trifecta, that you're going to be able to get it done? I can tell you that I talked to some of the Trump people that are writing budgets and proposing budgets and stuff like that. They are prepared this time. I mean, it really was the case in 2016. It was kind of a classic, you know, the dog caught the car when President Trump won the presidency. And first of all, they did not realize what they were going to be up against with the weaponization of government. They had somewhat of an idea of the how deep the swamp was, but not fully understanding it. Now there is a full understanding. And I believe you have people that are ready and prepared to write those budgets that are going to make sure that there's accountability. I think it will be a new day here. It is so important that we win this presidency and win both houses, because I think we'll have a real chance. And we have the vehicle to do it, Jenna, with the reconciliation bills. I believe we get one each year. I'm not outstanding on the processes that, in terms of the parliamentary processes, but I know we get two shots with reconciliation in the first couple years, and that's where you can get the work done, because you do not have to defeat a filibuster when you use reconciliation in the Senate.
Yeah, so well said, and I could not agree more that this November election is so important for all of these policy reasons. I mean, it is not just a matter of Republican versus Democrat or Trump versus Biden. All the way down ticket matters, because you need that coalition in Congress if you want to achieve some of these policies that we're talking about. And so the American people keep asking, where is the accountability? And all of these proposals are great, but as you mentioned, Congressman Tiffany, you have to have the majority in both houses, and also a president that won't veto some of these things in order to accomplish anything in Washington. And so it's very important for listeners to understand that, you know, as much as there's so much rhetoric and vitriol on both sides, it really comes down to voting for the best policy and the people who have the political will to implement it. And so in just the last minute or so I have with you, and I always appreciate you coming by the show, really appreciate your insight and the work that you do. We're praying for you on Capitol Hill daily. Speak also to Biden's executive order that, as you posted very aptly, legalizes illegal immigration.
Yeah, that is correct. It does. So think about Jay Johnson, Obama's head of the Department of Homeland Security, in the position that currently Mayorkas is in. He said during the Obama years that 1,000 people a day is an emergency for the United States of America. So what President Biden is talking about is we're going to allow at least 2,500 in before we would secure the border. That's nearly 1 million people, and that does not include all the loopholes that are going to go on. This is a classic case of they see the polls, they know what's happening, they know it's such a big issue in November. And I thought the key phrase that came out of President Biden's mouth yesterday, he said, be patient. He said to those open borders people, please be patient with me, because the American people want to have a little bit of a hiatus here. He said be patient because if he wins in November, we know we're going directly back to open borders. This is a political stunt. Nothing else. This is not going to secure the border.
Wow. And how just embarrassing and really insulting to the American people to say, be patient while all of these illegals come in and start to ruin the country. And of course, the Democrats want to give all of the illegals a pathway to citizenship so that they can continue the great replacement. I think that the Speaker Johnson has spoken so well about that. But Congressman Tom Tiffany, really appreciate your time. You can follow him at Rep Tiffany on X, and I think that you should. He posts a lot of really good information from the great state of Wisconsin and also Capitol Hill. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And a pro-life grandmother was sentenced to 2 years in prison as a D.C. judge appears to mock her poor health. This was just reprehensible rhetoric from this judge on the bench. So former president. This is the wrong article. Sorry about that. So this is from Town Hall. But this is about that was talking, of course, about Trump's guilty verdict, because literally all of the headlines are talking about about President Trump's guilty verdict. But there is a lot more news, actually, that we can talk about. So here's the right article. This coming from Town Hall. This is President Joe Biden, and maybe we should try to title him former President Joe Biden, but his Department of Justice has been quite eager to prosecute prayerful pro-life activists using the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances, or the FACE Act, including an elderly grandmother. Since then, more grandparents have been sentenced, including grandmothers in poor health. So late last month, 59-year-old Heather Adoni was sentenced to 24 years in prison. She's already been incarcerated for 9 months, which will count as time served. And it's been far from a pleasant experience for that grandmother, as Live Action News revealed. And so we're talking about Paulette Harlow as well, which is the final defendant sentenced in this particular case. She was sentenced last Friday also to 24 months, as Live Action News highlighted. About this, the more unique defendant, the 75-year-old grandmother, is particularly in poor health. And her husband even noted that to the judge, who said in a very heartfelt, emotional statement, he said, "I feel like Paulette is dying in my heart. I think she's having a hard time staying alive." And yet the judge simply said, "Well, maybe she will make an effort to remain alive, because isn't that a tenet of her religion?" I mean, very, very flippant remarks. But this is increasing the weaponization of government against specifically conservatives and pro-lifers. I mean, we want to talk about the Trump verdict, of course, and we have been covering it on this show. But it's way beyond just Donald Trump. This has gone so far beyond the pale from Biden's DOJ and from the leftists that want to not only shut down speech that they don't prefer, but they want to, as we are now in what is called by the left Pride Month, and I put that in air quotes, from for the month of June, want to compel speech that they do prefer. They want to compel you and I to participate in all of the nonsense, including the pronouns and the, you know, 75, maybe it's 175, who really knows, all of the genders and so forth. So here to discuss all of this and what the conservative Christian response should be is Walker Wildman, who all of you know as the vice president of the American Family Association, and we're always very happy when he joins us. So good morning, Walker.
Hey, Jenna. Good to be back on the program.
Yeah, so my first thought when I saw not only the sentencing of Paulette Harlow, this elderly grandmother, which is just despicable in and of itself, but then to read the judge's comments, I mean, that just adds insult to injury, and I really hope that that becomes a basis for sentence reconsideration in this case, because there is just no place for that in a courtroom. What was your response to this?
Yeah, this is what I call an unusually harsh treatment of this grandmother here. And when you watch the video of what she actually did, it was very nonviolent, non-confrontational. She was simply sitting in a chair blocking the door to the abortion clinic in the lobby. So she wasn't assaulting anyone, accosting anyone, threatening anyone. She was literally sitting in a chair in front of the door. So if we want to talk about nonviolent offenders and criminal justice reform, this is it. This is Exhibit A of a nonviolent offender who shouldn't do 2 years in prison. On the worst day possible, this is maybe a trespassing charge, if that. But as you know, Jenna, in the world of prosecutors and attorneys and criminal justice, the prosecutors have priorities. They can't prosecute every single case that comes before them. And for example, we had a gentleman out of Florida by the name of Chase Davis who threatened to kill AFA's leadership back, I think it was in 2019, and he said he was going to drive to our headquarters and kill everyone in charge of AFA. And guess what he got? He got 6 months in prison. He got six Wow. months in prison and 3 years of probation, and then he's out free, no questions asked. And he threatened to kill us. So, and here we have a grandmother sitting in a chair in the lobby of a clinic where they're killing babies every day, and she gets 2 years in prison, which is unusually harsh. So this is patently absurd, but it shows, Jenna, that our system has been hijacked by the God-haters. And they will turn a blind eye to the true injustice, which is the babies being murdered in the womb every single day at this clinic. And instead, they're going to go after and make a public spectacle out of locking up the 75-year-old grandmother. This is at the height of evil in our country.
Yeah, so well said, Walker. And it does just show you not only the double standard and the two-tier system of justice, but that meaningful justice has been completely perverted in this country, because when you don't have an objective standard of truth and justice that outflows from truth that is based on objective morality, then justice becomes whatever those in power prefer to enforce, and whatever they prefer to prohibit, and whatever they prefer to say is permissible in society. And we are experiencing that now with meaningful justice in many instances being foreclosed, and we're seeing the justice system weaponized. And I do want to make a note on the town hall piece. I think this is actually an error in this piece for the 59-year-old was sentenced. It says she was sentenced to 24 years in prison, and then it goes on to say in the quotation it's 24 months. So so I'll just make that edit and correction on their behalf on the town hall piece. So the 59-year-old, I think it's correct to say she was 24 months as well as Paulette Harlow. But even that, as you mentioned, Walker, is far too harsh. And I mean, this is literally a mostly peaceful protest if she's just blocking the door.
Yeah.
But this also shows how the federal system has been weaponized, because when you take something like the FACE Act, which was not intended at all for situations like this, and you take the federal government that are engaging, I mean, states have laws against trespass. They have ways of dealing with this themselves. Wouldn't it be far better to actually enforce federalism? Like, why does the federal government have anything to do with these types of situations?
Yeah, what we've seen happen, to your point, is the federal government has basically turned the federal law and the law enforcement agencies therein into political hit teams. And what I mean by that is they pick out selective portions of the law that they want to enforce for their political means, and they go after it 100 miles an hour. But if they come across crimes and illegality that is clearly also against federal law, but maybe it's done by a Democrat, maybe it's done by a Black Lives Matter activist, maybe it's done by a pro-abortion activist, well, we're not going to prosecute that because they're our ally. They're our ideological ally. So this is exactly what our founding fathers meant when they talked about equal justice under the law. Justice should have a blindfold. That's why when you look at Lady Justice, she's got a blindfold on, because justice should be prosecuted no matter who has committed the crime. But what we're seeing is the FBI and the DOJ, and you can, whether it's President Trump's case, whether it's all of the January Sixers, which this is not getting enough attention at all amongst Republicans and conservatives. But what's happening to the January Sixers is equally or more egregious than what's happening to these pro-life grandmothers. These people are being locked up without, they haven't even had a trial yet. So it's one thing if you have a speedy trial, a jury, et cetera, but these folks are still rotting in prison with no trial. So this is the most egregious thing I've seen in a long time when it comes to criminal justice. And it's not getting near enough attention. So, but that's what the Democrats have done. They have weaponized the justice system, the FBI and the DOJ. These are political hit teams, and their assignments are to go after conservatives and Republicans. And the way we know this is because we had the FBI agent whistleblower who blew the whistle and said that the Biden DOJ, that Merrick Garland and Christopher Wray told me that I need to drop my child pornography cases. He was prosecuting child pornography offenses, locking up sexual predators, and they told him he needs to drop all of that, and he needs to go after the MAGA extremists that trespassed, once again, at best, trespassed on the Capitol grounds on January 6th. And so he was completely diverted to prosecuting January 6th cases instead of child pornography cases. Now, ask anybody in this country, if they had to pick, where are we going to spend our law enforcement resources? Are we going to spend it locking up 65-year-old military veterans who were just on the Capitol grounds on January 6th? Or are we going to go after child pornography criminals, and everybody would say, let's go after the people that are victimizing children. But Biden's team said, no, we're going to focus on January 6th because this helps us politically, and it sends a message to our ideological opponent that if they mess with us, we will lock them up.
Yeah, well, anyone reasonable would absolutely say that. But of course, you get the people who are only concerned about political optics, and because it is better for them. And the leftists and the rainbow mafia, as I call them, I mean, they don't see child pornography and all of these other things as even necessarily being a threat to our culture and to society. I mean, they are increasingly wanting fewer and fewer penalties. They want to normalize this. I mean, now it's the quote unquote minor attracted persons. I mean, this is literally their agenda, and they want to not only decriminalize but destigmatize all of this deviant behavior. So of course they're going to go after that. And it is a worldview difference. And so fundamentally, I mean, this is when we say vote your values, vote on policy, this is what we mean, Walker, because it's not just about Republicans versus Democrats or personality over a different personality. It comes down to, what do we as Christians truly believe God intended the purpose of civil government to be? And if you really think that the purpose of government is to turn a blind eye to prosecuting things like child pornography, then respectfully, I would say that you have the wrong idea of what government is there to do. And this is why we're not libertarians, for example, because we say, no, the government should punish evildoers. And that squarely falls into the category of evildoers.
Yeah, I want to point out two more things, Jenna, that can be done about this, because people listen to this show, they listen to what we're talking about, and they're like banging their head on their steering wheel saying, why can't we do anything about this? And the reality is that we can. And Congress funds these prosecutors' offices. So even these local district attorneys, and in the case of D.C., this has to do with the FBI and the DOJ. So this is directly federal dollars. But even some of these state prosecutors, these local district attorneys, the vast majority of them, if not all, receive some type of money from the DOJ, from the federal government, whether it's in the form of grants, whatever you want to call it. Federal money is everywhere in the judicial system as far as funding some of these offices and these operations. And the Republicans have done squat, nothing, to defund these offices or even threaten. Like, they haven't even talked about withholding funds from these prosecutors that are locking up pro-life grandmothers. They haven't even done it. That's the first thing, and that's completely within the control of the House of Representatives and Mike Johnson and all the Republicans who beat their chest and have all these fancy hearings. I call Washington the biggest pillow fight that's ever existed. I mean, everybody's just throwing pillows. They're throwing pillows, but nobody gets hurt. It's all fun and games. And at the end of the day, nobody has to suffer any consequences. That's what Washington, D.C. is. But money can be withheld from these prosecutor offices. And then the last thing I'll say is that state governors and state attorneys general can push back against the FBI and the DOJ operating within their state borders. Now, there's a longer discussion about how can you completely push out the feds from the state. But you can definitely stop cooperating with these FBI hit squads that are locking up their political opponents.
Yes, well said. And I love that description of a massive pillow fight. And, you know, it's pay-per-view TV. And so everybody just tunes in for the entertainment value. Nobody gets anything from it. And yet we spend tons and tons of money tuning in to the show every day. And it is just massively a circus. I mean, I was there for years and far longer, frankly, than probably I should have been, just in the sense that it was so frustrating seeing how deep and wide the swamp really is. But as you mentioned, Walker, I mean, this is why we actually need to elect people who are willing not just to participate in the show, but participate in the policy and actually achieve some of these very attainable goals that are using the offices of federal government as the founders intended, not over broadly. We have a massively behemoth style federal government that does need to be reined in, but the power of the purse is one of the things that the founders intentionally did give to Congress. And even though they're spending a lot more money in the states than I think the founders ever intended, while they are still doing that, there's going to be strings attached. So why aren't conservatives saying, okay, we're going to put our strings on it now, rather than just saying, we'll go ahead and concede ground to the left? Because I think we are far too defensive than on offensive. And if all we do is just defend, we will never gain any ground. So this is why AFA Action also does a lot of really great work, and so appreciative to Walker Wildman and everyone who works with AFA Action as well, and to Walker for dropping by the show this morning. So we're out of time for this segment. Always appreciate his commentary. We will be back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Here's a chance for a trip full of great memories with AFA at the Ark. Join Wesley Wildman and Tony Battagliano for a special trip to the Ark Encounter in the Creation Museum October 31st through November 2nd. Enjoy tours, activities, and special presentations, and join a panel discussion with Wesley and Tony. Space is limited, so visit afa.net/events and click AFA at the Ark to find out more and register. That's afa.net/events and click AFA at the Ark. Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And before we get into our next headline this morning, I want to take just a moment and ask you, the AFR family across the country, and even those who are listening across the world today, to take a moment to pray for the family of Jesse and Bethany Morgan. You can find their blog posts at newcreationliving.com. And I've been following this story for the last couple of days, and it's just a real just complete tragedy. They lost their six-year-old daughter early this morning, who passed away from a just terrible accident that happened while their family was on vacation. And I don't know Jesse and Bethany personally. I've just followed this through their blog, but he is a discipleship and worship pastor and also a biblical counselor. And his blog posts have just resonated with so many people as he is openly processing, dealing with grief and with all of the emotion that comes with it, but remaining so focused on God and on truth and not allowing he and his wife and their family not allowing themselves to buy into the lies or just go off of emotion, but through this just unspeakable, horrible circumstance, but remain solely focused on the promises of God and allowing that to inform how they process grief. And his blog posts have just been very profound, gut-wrenching, and heartfelt, as you can probably imagine. And his family needs our prayers today. So if you want to send him and his family a post, he's at Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, Morgan 88, at Jesse Morgan 88 on X, or you can go to newcreationliving.com, newcreationliving.com, and read about their sweet daughter, Lucy Lynn Morgan, who passed away this morning. So our thoughts and our prayers are with them. And for the Christian, that is not just a meaningless turn of phrase, but as Romans 12 says, we rejoice with those who rejoice and we mourn with those who mourn. And as we go through and walk through this life with all of its ups and downs, its mountains and its valleys, that is the command of the Lord, that we walk through it together as the body of Christ. So I would encourage you to leave a post for them, but also be praying for his family. And again, the website is newcreationliving.com. All right, so let's turn to another headline, which is about artificial intelligence. And so this headline saying OpenAI insiders warn of a reckless race for dominance. We've been talking about the concerns with artificial intelligence for a while now. And joining me now to discuss the latest is Jake Denton, who is a tech policy advisor for the Heritage Foundation. And Jake, you know, this article talks about how the members of this group are saying that OpenAI, which started as a nonprofit research lab and then burst into public view with the release of ChatGPT, is kind of putting a priority on profits and growth as it tries to build artificial intelligence. But are we doing this kind of too fast and without enough being done to prevent AI systems from becoming dangerous?
Yeah, this is a very interesting topic that has kind of taken over Silicon Valley as a whole. And it really centers around two factions. You have the accelerationists, the people who really want to push this technology into the future as fast as possible, and what we kind of refer to as the safetyists that are really intent on just dragging this to a halt and slowing things down, making sure that everything, you know, cross every T, dot every I. It's like to the letter of the law. And I think the average American is probably somewhere in the middle of these two groups. But, you know, the extremes are kind of governing and steering the ship here. What the OpenAI employees are outlining are not really like common sense safety principles, things that you and I have talked about where, you know, maybe we want these systems to be built in the open, a little more transparent, but ultimately still march into the future. They want this to essentially stop as a whole so that it can be built in their image in this kind of like leftist worldview. It's very similar to how climate activists have really derailed nuclear energy is probably the closest example here. It's built around this kind of irrational fear driven largely by Hollywood depictions of this technology.
And so, you know, as we've continued to talk about AI, I mean, I think that the concept of AI continues to be a little bit vague, especially for people who haven't even tried to kind of open the ChatGPT and so forth. And it was actually interesting because the guy who cuts my hair here in Florida was saying that, you know, he was going on a cruise and for all of the different ports and stuff, just put in kind of the itinerary into ChatGPT And it just, you know, put out several, like within seconds, several different itineraries of all of these different, you know, ports that he could visit and everything. And he actually took a lot of advice and was like, this is such a great and useful tool. And, you know, so for some of those things, it seems very, you know, small scale and very helpful. But at the same time, the concerns with this kind of being shaped in various worldview images, as you mentioned, Jake, that's kind of really the danger. And with so much focus on so many other issues right now in Washington, do you think that there is enough concern about AI?
I think there's plenty of concern. It's just misplaced. There's this kind of hyper-focus on the doomsday scenario, these kind of like sci-fi killer robots style messaging points. When in reality, the kind of doomsday scenario looks very different in, you know, the world in which we're living. We're never going to have these Terminator robots in our lifetime. It's really not on the forecast. But what we can have here is a great deal of market consolidation where maybe, you know, just Microsoft totally rules all of tech with this AI boom. You can also have, you know, just as the gentleman described to you about, you know, visiting the ports and gives you a great itinerary, it's so compromised by, you know, this left worldview that really runs wild over Silicon Valley that maybe the recommendations in there are to only visit, you know, minority-owned businesses or any of these kind of other, like, DEI-type provisions. Suddenly the tool loses all of its real practical value and becomes just a hall monitor for the leftist worldview. And that is what we're really fighting for here. When we talk about risks at the Heritage Foundation, we want transparency. We want these things to be built in the open. We want accountability for the executives. But at the end of the day, we want this to propel and to reach its fullest potential, because if we don't do it, China will. And it's just about as bad, if not worse, that they take the mantle with this as if the, you know, leftist engineers do.
I'm speaking with Jake Denton, who is a tech policy advisor at the Heritage Foundation. And, you know, as we've discussed, I mean, with any new technology, especially with something that would have the reach and the capabilities and the usefulness in a lot of different avenues as something like AI, how important is it that the United States and our military, for example, continue to be at the forefront of this technology rather than being behind in what I would characterize, and you can tell me if you agree with this, but really kind of an arms race in a sense?
That's absolutely the correct characterization. This is obviously just a battle between the United States and China. The EU AI Act has essentially, you know, killed the European Union's chance of having a competing market. So it really is a battle between these two. And what that means is whoever, you know, excels the quickest and the fastest is going to be the market exporting this technology around the rest of the world. And it is not, that far-fetched that China could potentially beat us to the punch, and that all of these other foreign markets, all of these other foreign governments are carrying a Chinese AI system, which gives them not only great autonomy over the decision-making and all of these different things, you know, really capturing the central body of all of these different institutions. It also gives them a surveillance apparatus that will extend all around the world. And so we just, you know, got a big win on the TikTok issue. Suddenly we could have a million different TikToks all over the world monitoring every little detail of, you know, your business or your personal life by way of an AI tool. And so it's absolutely critical that America beats China to the punch, and it's done on our terms and not theirs.
Yeah, and speaking of TikTok, I mean, you know, we now have this legislation that is given ByteDance until January to divest that could be extended a little bit. Obviously, that is right around time frame that either, you know, Joe Biden will be sworn in for a second term or Donald Trump will be reelected for a second term. And so do we actually see TikTok being banned in the sense that this legislation prescribes?
I think that there's a pretty high likelihood that it follows its actual intended path and it reaches the point of a ban or a sale, simply because it just keeps getting worse for TikTok. You know, the leaks and the insiders coming out and telling what's really going on behind the scenes, it's just like a constant stream of these, you know, public statements of corruption and CCP influence over day-to-day decision-making. So I think really from that side of things, the evidence and the fact pattern has just kind of turned so significantly over the last couple of months that it's hard to see a world in which it doesn't reach that endpoint. I think it has to hit a sale or a ban. I don't think they can wiggle their way out of this.
And do you see, Jake Denton, with the members of Congress and other politicians and even, Joe Biden's campaign and now the Trump campaign that are getting on TikTok, that's a little bit of hypocrisy to continue to use that tool to campaign ahead of 2024 while at the same time everyone involved. I mean, that's one thing that Biden signed the legislation. Trump, during his administration, wanted to ban TikTok, and yet both campaigns are on it. Is that a point of perhaps hypocrisy to use that tool for their campaign while it is still available, while at the same time saying that Americans shouldn't use it?
I don't know if I would necessarily say hypocrisy. I think really what I hone in on here is maybe one of the shortcomings of the legislation, giving them a runway for a sale that extends past Election Day, essentially forces the hand of all of the 2024 candidates to at least weigh the idea of jumping on the platform. They're all well aware of the security risks. They're all aware of just how bad the content is on the platform, but they also are playing for keeps. You know, this election is going to be pivotal, and they recognize that this is where Gen Z voters are. And so really it's unfortunate that the legislation essentially pushed us on this path where, you know, we're simultaneously trying to get off the market, but also kind of recognize we have to be on it. It's kind of it's a tough spot for them, but I don't think anyone should be on the platform. I think it's, kind of a slippery slope towards just suddenly having all of your data spill out online just so you can watch a couple of silly videos. I don't think, any American should take this as a sign to jump on the platform. I don't really think any politician necessarily needs to be on the platform. I think it's kind of a farce. I don't think you actually reach American voters. I think it's a largely international audience that these people are communicating to. So at the end of the day, I don't really think it's a wise choice, but it's one that we all saw coming.
Yeah. And, I had a guest on my Salem TV show yesterday that said, in terms of just the Americans who are on Twitter, that seems to be the younger teen, Tide Pod consuming sort of demographic that probably are not voting anyway because they can't yet. So,
yeah.
And I thought that was pretty apt for my guest, Jeff Hunt, who's great. And as we move forward with, and just the last couple of minutes we have here with you, Jake Denton, and I always appreciate your commentary on tech and explaining this in, very layman's terms, especially, for someone like me who relies on all of the tech geniuses to even just, help me get my laptop up and running when I need it and all of that. So I always appreciate you, you kind of distilling this into ways that are understandable. Is there any legislation currently pending on AI that we should be aware of and either champion or, call our members of Congress and be concerned about?
So this AI legislation landscape is actually very interesting. It's largely unfolding at the state level. There's over 400 pieces of legislation that have been proposed this year alone on the issue of AI at a state and local level. And so that's really where the battle has been going on. I think when you look at the federal level, it's overrun with bad ideas. And really this comes from the problem of trying to cure symptoms rather than the underlying disease. You see an issue of the week jump up, a deepfake video goes live. Everyone just wants to solve for the deepfake. But there's, all these underlying policy issues that have originated from 20 years of not actually acting on tech policy that enabled this, use case of AI to go unchecked. And so for the federal level, I think what's important is to encourage your member to take a, holistic view of AI. Don't do the policy solution that gets you in the news headline. Do the technical nitty-gritty, kind of ugly AI policy that's focused more on the actual computer science and less on the news headline. And I think that is really where we should be engaging in this battle.
Really well said. And the Heritage Foundation does such great work. And that is important to realize that it's not just on the federal level that this legislation is being proposed, but also the state level. And it's just yet another reminder, Jake Denton, that, you know, we should always live locally, engage in local politics as well. And even though most of the media tends to focus on the national headlines, we should be very aware of what's going on in our own states, our own municipalities, and be very engaged. And as my good friend Abe Hamilton III always says, to live locally, because that's also what scripture commands of us, to be engaged in our civil society, in our families, in our churches. And it's a great reminder to close out the program this morning. Always appreciate your insights. That's all the time we have for Jenna Ellis in the morning this morning. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net. And always appreciate it when, as Tim says, it's positive and encouraging like Caleb. So thanks so much for all the encouragement that so many of you give me on a daily basis. I really appreciate your prayers, your support for me, for this ministry, and for everyone here at AFR. Have a great day. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.